For members only. Golf Smarter number 368, published on January 29, 2013.
SmarterPodcasts.com, delivering sound advice.
How the Aimpoint putting system works with Mark Sweeney.
This is Golf Smarter.
Welcome back to Golf Smarter for members only, Mark.
Yeah, thanks, Fred.
And thank you again for agreeing to come in for part two of this, because, you know, we talked about the history of it, how you got it started and what you did with it. But now, like, what's in it for me, dude?
What's in it for me? What's in it for you?
And, as a golfer.
As a golfer, you and I are kind of the same. You know, we don't play enough golf. We're amateurs. I didn't come from the golf industry. What's in it for us is that you can actually learn very easily how to accurately read greens. And, you know, one of the big problems, my inspiration for starting all this was I went to my instructor at the time, and I was, you know, a terrible putter, and I just said, how do you learn to read greens? And his answer was, well, just do it a lot and you'll get better. And the thing that went through my head
was, this is the age of technology.
And at the time I was probably, you know, mid-30s. I was like, I don't have a lot of time. I was like, if I play once a week, it's a great week. I don't have time. And I know, you know, tour players who are 40 and they still don't understand greens. How do I ever possibly think I'm going to get this? And it just completely, you know, frustrated me. And you know, my technical side is when, well, that's not good enough. It can't be that difficult. It just can't be that difficult to figure out.
When you said you were in your mid-30s, you're talking about your age or your handicap?
My age.
Just curious.
Yes, I didn't start playing golf at 5 like most tour players. You know, I started golf at 30 or late 20s, and I was like, it just doesn't work for me. I don't accept that.
Do you? So let's pursue this. How does this work? How is this going to make me a better putter? And
very
we have
simply,
a long. No, I don't want simple. I want detail. We have a long time to talk about this. Let's get into detail with this.
Okay, so reading greens is very simple because there's a few factors that completely control break, or at least 97-98%. Break is controlled by gravity. Gravity is a consistent force everywhere in the world. Everywhere you go, it's always the same. And so if you understand a few basic rules, you can very, very accurately predict what the ball is going to do ahead of time. So it's really, you know, if you think about high school physics, if you hold a ball up at your shoulder and you drop it, how long does it take to hit the ground? Well, it takes about a half a second. Every time you do it, everywhere in the world, if I hold both my arms out at shoulder height and drop two balls, they hit the ground at the same time. There's no question whatsoever that that's always what's going to happen. Now, for some reason, you get on the putting green and people say, well, yeah, but the ball breaks uphill in Indio, in Palm Desert. Well, no, it's think about what you're saying. If you actually think the ball breaks uphill, what you're saying is gravity, the force of gravity reverses itself.
In Palm Desert, that makes sense.
In Palm Desert, that makes sense, or wherever you go. And you know, it's just not possible. It's physically impossible for gravity not to have the same effect. And, you know, some very intelligent people will say, yeah, but it's a little bit different in certain parts of the world. Yes, it's you know, minutely different, but not enough for us to tell the difference putting a ball. So anyway, long story short is the first thing we do is we just teach golfers, here's what controls break. And believe it or not, I've asked that question to just about every student I've ever had, and everybody from new golfers to tour players, and maybe one in 200 people will give you a fairly close answer. Maybe one in 200. And tour players, even at tour player level, you say what causes break, they don't really know. I mean, they know, yeah, it's slope and it's gravity, but that's where it ends. There's nothing more specific than that, and that's not enough information. I need to know more information. Yes, I know. If there's slope, the ball may or may not break. It may break a little, might break a lot, but that's not good enough. I need to know from, you know, if it's 10-foot putt, does it break 1 inch or 36 inches? How do I know that? And so what we do is we just start off in the beginning. Well, what causes break? Well, if the ball is tilted to the side, then it's going to fall to the side. So literally just imagine taking a ball and tilting it to the left. What's it going to do? It's going to roll to the left.
Wait a minute. What does that mean? How do you mean tilt a ball to the left?
Well, imagine if you put a ball on a table, okay, and you just tilt the table to the left, the ball's going to roll to the left.
Okay, not the ball, but the where the ball's sitting.
Well, yes. The ground that the surface that the ball is touching, if it's tilted to the side, then the ball will roll off to the side.
Okay.
And that's it. That's what break is. Break, fundamentally, is just the ball falling sideways. So you can tilt the ball forward or backwards, like if you're going straight up the hill or straight down a hill. In which case, it might go faster or slower, but it's not breaking, is it? It's rolling straight. The minute I tilt the ball or the surface to the left or to the right, the ball will fall to the side.
But and how do you determine how much it's going to?
Piece. Okay. So that's the next piece. So the first part is, why does the ball break? Break being defined as the ball falling sideways or laterally. Well, it falls to the side because it's tilted to the side. Well, how much tilt there is and how long the ball is rolling determines exactly how much break there is. Okay, so if you tilt the ball 45 degrees to the left and let it roll for 2 seconds, it's going to break X amount. And that's just math. It's just pure physics, you know, high school physics. A ball rolling down an inclined plane will roll a certain distance or break a certain amount. So now, that sounds complicated, but the way it actually works as a golfer is very simple. There's three things I have to know to exactly predict break. I have to know how long the putt is, 5, 10, 15 feet, whatever, how the length of the putt. I have to know how steep the slope is that I'm putting across. And then finally, I have to know what angle I'm putting across the slope. And you can do all those in 5 to 10 seconds, literally. Just distance is easy. I walk up to the putt, it's 15 feet. Okay, no problem. Now, what do I have to do? I have to find the true direction of the slope. I have to estimate how steep it is, which is actually much easier than people think. And then I simply look at the ball and see what angle it's rolling. Is it rolling straight up the slope or is it rolling 90 degrees directly across the slope? And then those three things translate into a specific break amount. So, for example, if I'm 10 feet across an average slope, it's going to break 6 inches. If I'm 15 feet, it's going to break 12 inches. It's just pure math.
Oh, well, what is that formula that you said 6 inches?
Well, the actual formula is very complicated. But you, as a player, you don't need to know that. So what we do is we give you basically a chart where you just look up. It looks like a clock face, roughly. You just say, "Here's my ball. I'm putting 20 feet across this slope at 90 degrees, so directly across the slope." If it's a flat slope, it'll break 7 inches. If it's an average slope, it'll break 17 inches. And you're literally just looking up the number. You're not doing any math yourself at all. It's just pre-printed. It's like me saying, here's a chart. If you drop the ball from 3 feet, it'll take X amount of time. If you drop it from 10 feet, it'll break Y amount of time. It's just a lookup. So the skill as a golfer is finding slope. It's really just all about finding slope. Because if I can find the slope, in other words, which way is it pointing – and how steep it is, then the break is just plug and play. It's very, very straightforward if you can find slope. So the biggest thing we teach is, here's how you find slope.
And then you come across a long putt with multiple breaks.
Then you just break it up into pieces. So if I have a double breaking putt, I'll break it up into, let's say, 2 to 3 pieces and just read each piece and add them up.
And
I could read a 70-foot putt in 30 to 40 seconds. I mean, down to the inch, no matter how many slopes are involved.
How is your putting? How good have you become at putting since you've started this?
Well, the first time I ever tested this, and I didn't really know what I was doing at the time, but I was giving a lesson and we were talking about, well, what makes the ball break more and what makes the ball break less. And the guy looks at me and goes, you know what? I would really like to know exactly how much. Like, yeah, I know it breaks more, but what does that mean? Does that mean 3 feet or 2 feet or 12 inches? So I basically used the same computer software that does the line for TV, and I just had it spit out all these numbers. And I took it out and tested it, and I only did one slope, so I just did a basic average 2.5 – I think it's a 2% slope. And I went out and played 18 holes, and I think I had 11 putts on the front and 14 putts on the back, and I had never, ever – ever been below 30 putts, and I never made anything outside 10 feet. I think I made 2 or 3 putts outside 15 feet, made a lot more 5, 6, 7 footers. and I remember just thinking, wow, there's really something to this. I don't really understand it yet. I don't really know how to use it yet. But just the first time I ever tried it, I could not believe how much better my putting was, just knowing what the proper break was. How much should this ball break? Well, if you ask most people, they just go, I don't know. You know, I'll just look at it and take my best guess. Well, right. There's actually a very, very clear formula, and I don't like to use the word formula because you're not doing math, but there's a very clear relationship between slope and break. And so if you understand the slope, the break is very simple, because I basically just, you know, the the software will, the physics engine will tell you what the break is. This pre-printed chart we have, it'll just tell you this putt will break 20 inches, this putt will break 6 inches, based on how long the putt is, how much slope, and finally what angle you're putting across the slope.
Are there no other X factors involved? I would think that there are numerous other factors involved.
So green speed is very important. So you have to
First one.
So as green speed gets faster, the ball breaks more. So for example, if I asked you, why does a putt break more at stimp 12 than it does at stimp 8, what would you say?
Because it's moving faster.
The ball's moving faster?
Wait, what? Do that again. What?
So the greens. So a putt on a fast green breaks more than a putt on a slow green.
Okay.
So part of our education is, well, why is that? Yes, we all kind of have experienced that, but why?
I'm not going to answer. I'm going to let you do that.
The answer is simple, because the ball's rolling for longer. The ball putt takes more time. So anything that increases the time of a putt increases the break. So what increases time? Green speed changes the time of a putt. The length of the putt changes the time of the putt. How hard you hit the putt changes the time of a putt, but it's all really boils down to time. So you're tilting the ball sideways and you're rolling it for a certain amount of time, and that equals break. Okay, so how do we use that? We set the green speed. Let's say it's running 10 today. Okay, so our green speed's 10. The biggest other factor is really wind. I mean, yes, there's pitch marks and potential imperfections in the green, but there's nothing you can do about that anyway. It's completely out of your control. So what we do is say, here's how much the ball should break. The imperfections, you can't control them anyway. And in my experiences, they rarely really cause you to miss a putt. They might deflect the ball a little bit, but it's not enough that you can really get worked up about it.
And when I learned this method, this system, what do you call it, a method or a system?
I've called it both before.
Yeah.
It's a method, but it's also really a curriculum. I mean, there's a method that says here, A plus B plus C equals break. But it's, aimpoint is more than just the method. It's teaching you. It's really it's a curriculum like any subject in school is a curriculum. How much do you want to know about green reading? We can do everything from very basics. Here's how much a 10-foot putt breaks, to really understanding, the underlying geometry of break, which gets, kind of PhD level. But you can take it as far as you want to take it, like finance or like geometry or like, art history, whatever it is, you can go as deep as you want. But you really only need a couple hours to have a really pretty fundamental understanding of break and to be able to use it as a player.
And how do you use it as a player? I mean, when you're on the course, how do you use it?
So the process is this. You have a putt. First question is, how long is the putt? You can determine that just walking up to it. Some people walk their putts off, which is fine. But just you need to have some pretty good estimation of how long the putt is. So you do that walking up to the putt. And then my process is let's say you have a 20-foot putt. You walk up to it and you find the slope using your feel. So we use very, very little vision in our green reading. You use vision for how long the putt is, and you use vision for seeing what angle you're putting across a slope. But finding the slope itself is 99% feel-based. So we're actually, a lot of times when we train people, is we shut down their eyes, we make them close their eyes and find slope only using their sense of feel and their sense of balance. And when you do that to somebody, they usually find it correctly every single time. The hard part with using your vision is that vision is interpretive of slope. So it's trying to figure out slope based on the horizon and buildings and trees and vertical references. And it's just not accurate. So if you've ever been into a fun house, you know how easy it is to trick yourself and fall on your face, because they take everything and they skew the angles and you really can't quite figure out what's up and what's down. So we just take that out of the equation. We say, we're not going to look for slope. We're going to feel slope. And once you've done that, you're 90% done with your read.
And so when you're saying, I want to define that. When you say feel, it's like not with their hands. They're not crawling around on the ground, are they?
It's just walking. When you walk, your body is automatically adjusting to slope constantly. Otherwise, you'd fall on your face.
Right. And so, are you doing this with your eyes closed?
a lot of times we train with our eyes closed. I mean, when you're actually playing, you know, you don't do it with your eyes closed. But we want to activate your sense of feel because your body has a built-in you know, on your iPhone, there's an accelerometer,
sure,
which basically tells it if it's tilted left, right, up, or down.
Mm-hmm.
Well, your body has that built-in. So you learn it when you're an infant and your mom puts you down and sits you in a sitting position. You fall on your face or you fall on the back of your head, and your body learns how to keep itself upright. Well, when we're walking around during the day, we're always walking on tilted surfaces, whether it's your driveway or the golf course or a staircase, whatever. Your body is constantly adjusting to an uneven surface, and it's very, very, very highly developed, and it's largely conscious because we do it so much. But we can use that same sense to find slope on a golf green. So what we teach you is to learn by basically feeling in your feet and in your sense of balance, where is the slope. So if you stand across a slope, you can sense that. If your right foot's high and your left foot's low, you can feel that. But as you turn your body, your feet will become level. One's not higher than the other. And if your feet are level, it means you're facing directly into the slope. So we just teach you how to walk in and align your body straight up the slope. And it's, like I said, it's 95% feel. We actually have a training exercise for students where we'll have them close their eyes and do the entire read and hit the putt with their eyes closed. And their reads are as good or better than if their eyes are open.
Wow. Okay, so you figure out how long, you figure out the slope through feel, and that's it?
Yeah, so you're basically just pointing your toe up the slope. The biggest part is you have to estimate how steep the slope is. And so let's just say flat, average, or steep. Once you do that, you simply look at your ball and that will show you what angle. It's a little bit hard to describe on verbally, but you can determine very simply if your chest is pointing straight up the slope and the ball is across your right shoulder, that's a 90-degree angle. Okay. So your toes are facing straight up. And as the ball comes across your shoulders, the angle gets bigger and bigger. So if it's straight across my shoulder, it's 90 degrees across a slope, and then I simply just look up the break. So if I have that 20-foot putt and I think it's an average slope, and I look across and I see the ball at my right shoulder, that ball 2 feet on a stimp 10. Hmm. I expect 2. You know, if it's a stimp 8, it's a foot and a half. It's different. And then it just frees you up to focus on speed. So what we want to do is we want to make the read portion of putting very short and efficient. Walk up. It's a very logical process. How much should this ball break? Well, it should break 2 feet. Okay, fine. Line up to 2 feet, and now it's all about feel and all about controlling speed.
Fascinating. And when you took this idea to the USGA initially, you were focused on television.
Yes. Well, when I went to the USGA, it was about that Palm Pilot app.
Yeah.
Which they said no to, which was fine. I wasn't expecting them to approve that. Then for television, I had to go to the PGA Tour because the network said, we'll use it if the PGA Tour vouches for it.
Okay.
So I 6 months or so working with the PGA Tour, just giving them demonstrations until they signed off on it. And then I had to go back to the USGA because after we developed this system for normal golfers to use, which relies to some degree on this chart I'm talking about, we had to get approval for the chart. So I had to go back to the USGA and submit that and see if it was conforming, which it is. And then that's kind of the last time I talked to them, really. That was a while ago. That was probably 5 years ago.
Hmm. And so now you developed a curriculum.
Yes.
On this. What was the next process from there?
Then it was just perfecting it. I mean, you know, how I teach now is different from how I taught it a couple years ago. We've learned more efficient and easier ways to get the read. So there's a number of ways to get a read on a putt. And what we've done is basically we've taught thousands and thousands and thousands of people. We've learned what works best and what is more difficult. And basically all the things that tended to be more difficult to learn or to use as a player, we just got rid of them. Mm-hmm. And said, okay, it's the simplest possible way to get a read, and that's what we currently teach.
And who are you teaching?
All sorts of golfers. I teach everything from PGA Tour players and LPGA players down to high handicaps, juniors, lots and lots of juniors learn this very, very quickly. On the LPGA, we've probably got about 30 girls who have gone through it. We're probably 15 or so guys who have gone through it. Scott McCarron was the first PGA Tour player to use Aimpoint. He started 3 years ago. He was way ahead of the curve. And he and his caddy both went through the process, and he started using it. And within 6 months, he went from, I think, 178th in putting to 14th. And then the next 2 years, he was top 10 in putts gained. And currently this year, he's been injured, so he statistically doesn't show up. But if you look at his individual scorecard, he's ranked first in putts gained.
Well, that's testimony right there.
Yeah, so he was the first person on the PGA Tour, and then Stacey Lewis was the first person on the LPGA, and Stacey went from 30-something in the world to she was second this year, and I think she's pretty darn – so I think she's only 3 points behind Yanni, and she started about 18 months ago, and she went – I don't know where she was in the money, but she's ranked second in putting on the LPGA. First in top tens, first in, you know, all kinds of things, Rolex Player of the Year. And this was a girl who had a good stroke, had good speed, hit the ball very, very well. And really all you had to do was just clean up or read a little bit and say, here is the correct place to be aiming these putts. And she's just killed it out there.
So once you start figuring out where the breaks are and what that's going to do, it's really all a matter of your speed development.
Yes. It's a matter of being able to start the ball online and really controlling speed. So we see once people learn the aim, usually their misses are speed misses.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, our aims are based on a certain speed, which we'll call a foot by the hole. So basically, if you miss, the ball would go 12 inches past the hole. So if they hit it firmer than that, you're probably going to go over the top edge. If you die it in the hole, it could miss a little bit low, although slower speeds tend to work better than faster speeds. But it's really controlling the speed of the putt.
So, and why are slower better than faster?
Because slower, the ball tends to be coming in higher and softer, and it'll fall in the sides of the hole. So the slower the ball, the wider the hole is, effectively. As you hit the ball firmer and firmer, you can go over the sides, and it's not going to go in. It's just going too fast to drop in.
I see. That makes sense.
Yeah, so if I hit a ball 5 feet past the hole, which I know we don't want to, but we've all done it, the effective width of the hole is half an inch. So if I don't roll the ball right over the center of the hole, it'll bounce out.
And there are many people who claim to be putting gurus, putting experts, putting instructors. How have they received this?
A lot of them have received it very well because a lot of my instructors, I have about 120 certified instructors around the world, and a lot of them are very good putting teachers. So, for instance, Craig Farnsworth, renowned, you know, putting guru, and what people like Craig have realized is they teach the stroke and they teach a lot of times putter fitting and mechanics, but green reading is really the foundation for that. And you have to be able to teach green reading to have a all-around great putter. So I can have the best stroke in the world and I can have the best speed control in the world, but if I don't know what the right target is, I'm not going to make putts. You have to start with a good read and then build everything else around that. So a lot of them have really come on board. David Orr was one of the very first guys, and he's a great putting instructor. He's been working with Justin Rose and a lot of really top players lately. And he was, I think, the first or second person I ever taught that I ever certified. But they just realize it's part of the putting puzzle. I need to read greens, I need to start the ball online, and I need to control speed. And you need all three of those to be great.
When you get to these, you have these certified instructors, when they come to you and realize that you're just a guy, you're not a PGA pro, you're just a guy with this idea of and a curriculum. Do you get any resistance on that? Like, wait a minute, why are you teaching me?
Yes, I in the beginning. Since in the beginning, it was very much an uphill battle because I was not from the golf industry. I didn't know people in the industry. I was, you know, nobody knew who I was, and I luckily had some very good people who kind of took me under their wing and helped me along. Brian Mogg was the first instructor to really see it and say, "This is really cool. You need to do more with it." And then Mike Adams, very shortly after that, said the same thing. And so, you know, I'm in this business largely because of those two guys, Mike and Brian Mogg. Because I didn't even know where to start. I mean, I wasn't part of the golf industry, and that was a very hard thing to break into. So the first few years, it was very difficult. But there, you know, there's some really great instructors out there who are very open-minded, and I just kind of started working with them. And then after, you know, they got into it and saw how well it worked, and then after players started getting into it, then more and more instructors starting to call and say, "Hey, this is just something I need to learn."
The beauty of word of mouth.
Yeah, I mean, I don't do any advertising. 100% of what I do is word of mouth, whether it's from players or instructors or just you know, golf clubs calling and saying, "Hey, I've got members who really want to learn this." It's 100% word of mouth.
Amazing. Amazing. Are some greens that you've brought this to more difficult than others? Some golf courses?
I used to think that, and I don't anymore. I used to think there were some that were harder than others. And, you know, back when I first started, because I didn't really understand all the pieces as well. But probably in the last 18 months or so, we've got the process so refined that it just makes no difference to me. Absolutely no difference what the green looks like. I think typically, the hardest greens tend to be the flattest greens.
Really?
Yeah, where your eyes just completely start to fail, and you really have to be in your sense of feel because you won't see the slope. When it gets really flat, you just won't see it. And you really have to be tuned into your feel. So we spend a lot more time training that. When there's a lot of slope, it's obvious where it is. Speed is harder, but the break is a piece of cake when it's steep. But as it gets flatter and flatter, your eyes become more and more useless to find what you're looking for.
So how do we find your certified instructors? They're all over the world, right?
I've got instructors in, I think, about 21 countries now, and they're all over the world. And you can find them on aimpointgolf.com. There's a listing in there for instructors. I highly recommend. A lot of them are very good golf pros. In addition to being green reading instructors, they're great at full swing, at putting mechanics. They've got a big range of skills. So I definitely recommend finding one in your area. I mean, I travel around a lot, but you know, I'm only in any particular state maybe once a year. But the local instructor, they're always available, and it's a very simple thing to learn. It only takes – a typical clinic is 2 hours, but it's really only about an hour of learning and about an hour of just practicing it so that when you go out on course the next time, you can do it comfortably.
Has any instructor failed?
Have they failed the certification?
Yeah. I mean, what's that process?
The certification is pretty strenuous. It's a closed system, meaning it's not an open enrollment system. It's very we're very particular about our instructors because my theory is to have fewer instructors who are very, very high quality rather than just saying, "Oh, there's 10,000 people out there who can do this. Just go find one." I want to make sure that you know, my group of instructors are the best in the world at green reading. So with fewer instructors, we can spend a lot more time one-on-one developing them. And nobody has failed certification, although there have been a few that are, how do I put this, they're not certified anymore. Let me put it that way.
And what would make you revoke their certification?
The biggest reasons are they're just not teaching the Aimpoint system. So what happens with some people is I've been doing this for almost 10 years, and there's lots of things that I purposely don't teach because they're either very difficult or they fail in certain situations or the students just don't understand them. And sometimes in the beginning, when you get instructors, they go, "Oh yeah, that's all cool, but I really want to do it this way." You know, something totally different, which I know doesn't work or doesn't work as well because we've already, you know, tried it with 300 other students. And just occasionally an instructor just insist on kind of putting their own stamp on it. Sometimes that's helpful. Sometimes they actually come up with good ideas, and sometimes they really kind of go in the wrong direction. And, you know, I've had, not very often, but I did have a situation where somebody did a school and one of these students called me up and said, "I just didn't get any of it. I have no idea what's going on." And a really good player. And I went and taught this player afterwards. And, you know, in 30 or 40 minutes, they understood it. And that just shows that the instructor wasn't really doing their job. And again, it's pretty rare for that to happen. But when it does happen, we clean it up pretty fast.
Wow. Good for you.
You know, Aimpoint's a brand like any other brand, and you know, you really have to be vigilant about keeping quality high to make sure that everybody who takes it an Aimpoint class is getting the same the curriculum, basically. You know, if you take a class from me or any other instructor, you should really be learning the same stuff.
How about architects? I always find it fascinating talking to architects because, you know, they're not golf professionals like the two of us. They're guys who are, you know, they on paper, they do the stuff on paper, and generally they're not great golfers, so they understand the pains of what it is, you know, what they're designing and how to mess with people's heads. How have they responded to this?
Well, it's interesting. I really don't work much with architects. I've done a few redesign jobs on greens where we basically can take a green and help them reshape it for faster green speed. So they tend to be old courses, you know, maybe an old Donald Ross design where they were designed for stimp 7 and they're running them at 13 now. But architects are fascinating because a lot of them understand how to fool your eyes, and they understand how to flank a steep slope and a subtle slope so that you really can't visually figure out what's going on. Sometimes it's accidental, but the better ones understand those optical illusions and they'll purposely build those in. And I love those because every time I see an optical illusion, I'm just, you know, dying to figure out, okay, why do I see the ball going right and the ball actually goes hard left? Like, what is that illusion? How do they create those angles to trick me? And they do it on purpose. There's no question they do it on purpose.
Oh, yeah.
And hear them, you know, really out there bragging about it. But you see it. And what I love about that is, our system, it doesn't matter what the optics look like. If you follow the system, it'll give you the right read. But it's really cool sometimes to see a putt that every person you ask says, well, this is a right edge putt, and they hit it and it goes 2 feet to the right. You know, just absolutely visually cannot get the read right visually because the architect has done such a good job disguising true slope.
What have you learned about golf course design or green design through this process?
The biggest thing I've learned is that you have to have slope. You got to get water off. So any architect or any superintendents are actually really good at finding slope because they understand it. They understand the water has to move off the green or the grass dies.
Fascinating.
So what I've understand is there's a range of slopes you want to put on a green. It's got to be at least 1% to get water off, but anything more than 4% is unpinnable. So if you have a 7,000 square foot green, the question is, well, how many pin positions do I want? If it's too steep, then I don't have a lot of pins. If it's too flat, it's boring. So there's got to be some, you know, healthy mix of flat areas and steep areas. So if you look at somewhere like Augusta, you know, they've got flat areas and they've got steep areas. And if you're not in the right section of the green, it can be very difficult. But once you're in the correct section of the green, it's perfectly fair. In other words, the putting is they're fair putts, meaning they're not too steep or they're not too difficult. It really puts a high premium on approach shots. So the interesting thing I found is, okay, well, what do you want this green to do? What do you want to reward? What do you want to punish? How much do you want to punish somebody for being in the wrong area? And that's just a designer's job. You know, what do I want to do with this hole? What do I want to force them to do? Do they need to hit it within 10 feet, like the top right at the 16th green of the Augusta, when they get that top right pin? If you're not within 10 feet, the ball goes all the way to the bottom. It's punishing for not having a good approach shot. But if you hit it inside 10 feet, it's an easy putt.
Amazing. So I'm reviewing your website, and there's a lot of things that I would just love a little explanation. You have products on here. What are the products that Aimpoint offers?
Well, the main products are green reading curriculum, so basically just teaching golfers how to read greens. I've also got the TV product, which is really just geared towards the networks. For existing students, I have an iPhone app, which is really makes the most sense for people who have taken a class. If you haven't taken a class, you won't use it properly, most likely. So it's really there to support people who have already gone through an Aimpoint class to help them learn faster.
And how long does the class take?
Typically 2 hours.
Okay.
2 hours is plenty of time in a big class. If I have a one-on-one student, I can usually get them to double breaks in about 45 minutes, believe it or not. Really not that difficult. And then we'll be developing more products, you know, throughout the year.
And why is there a putter recommended on Aimpoint?
Very good question. So I partner with Adele Golf because they make custom putters that are designed to aim where you think they're aimed. So what they do is they design the putter to match your optics. Okay, so you might get a putter off the shelf and you think you aim it straight and you actually aim it 5 degrees left.
Mm-hmm.
But you aim it 5 degrees left. Well, what Adele does is they say, okay, based on how you set up and what your personalized optics look like, we're going to configure the putter that is pointing where you think it's pointing. And what your putter might be is completely different than what my putter might look like. So they go through a fitting process where they figure out exactly what combination of head shape and hosel and lie and lines will get you aiming the putter straight. Because once you aim the putter at your target, then you can make a pure stroke. You don't have to make compensations. The second thing they do, which is really cool, is they change the weighting of your putter so that you can have the best speed control. So me, for instance, I like to feel weight in my hands. And if I have a putter head that's too light, I really struggle with speed, but once I get the correct weighting, whether it's in the head or the shaft or even the under the grip of the putter, it's much more easy to control speed.
Wow. You know, I never even thought of that, is that that your putter, you know, you should be, I guess you should be fitted for your putter just like you should be fitted for your golf clubs.
Yeah, I mean, the more I do this, the more important I think equipment is, because I can take any golfer and give them three different putters, and one they'll aim left, one they'll aim right, and one they'll aim straight. Well, if you're aiming left of where you think all the time, what do you have to do to make a putt? You have to either hit it really hard, or you have to push it up the hill, or you have to open the face, and it forces all these compensations, which aren't necessarily good for you. But if I know where I mean, imagine if you're staying in the fairway and you're aimed 40 yards left of the pin. Okay, well, what do you have to do? You've got to, you know, hit a big slice, or you've got to block, or you've got to do something with your swing versus if you really lined up correctly at pin. So I don't teach full swing at all, but I know a lot of full swing instructors say, you know, alignment is so critically important to your full swing. Well, it's the same way with putting. Okay, if I'm not pointing my putter where I want to hit it, then I've got to manipulate the face or manipulate the speed to try to make the putt.
And you use the, what is it, Adele putters?
Yeah, Adele system. Is awesome,
and that has also impacted your putting.
Oh, hugely. I had a putter before that I couldn't aim at all, but I didn't know it. I had no my putter, and I got this putter, and it was, you know, 3 or 4 degrees left all the time. And I was like, well, no wonder, you know, I struggle with this. So I went through the fitting process, and they gave me a putter that aimed straight, and then fitted me for the weighting, so that the weight of the putter felt right to my brain. So I could control speed, and it's just a world of difference.
Yeah, I want to talk to you more when we get off on that one, because maybe we should bring them on the show too.
Oh yeah, it's real. They're really, really good stuff. Really cool putters and beautiful. They're all handmade and customized, and it's a real special piece of equipment.
Wow, fabulous. Well, I'm just so impressed with your success, and I'm really happy for you. It's awesome. There's been some amazing things said about Aimpoint. You know, you have quotes listed here on the website. My favorite, you know, is what Golf Channel says is the best kept secret in golf. And I guess they were trying to keep you a secret for a while because they wanted you all to themselves.
Yeah, well, they had a good run. Like I said, they got their first Emmy, and they did a good job. They took a risk with Aimpoint well before anybody else did, and luckily, you know, it paid off for them. So I've always had a lot of gratitude for Golf Channel for kind of going out on a limb with the product.
Absolutely.
Really believed it was possible, and they did it anyway.
Amazing. Well, Mark, congratulations, and thanks again so much for so much of your time, and I wish you all the luck in the world, because you, like I said, you got 75 children and you got to put them all through college, so this is definitely going to help.
Great. Thanks a lot, Fred.
Congratulations to Golf Smarter members Stuart Margulis of Glen Mills, PA, and Gary Stewart of Alta Loma, California. Thank you both for renewing your Golf Smarter memberships this week. Because you did, you are each going to receive a free 30-count bottle of Alpha Brain by Onnit Labs. Alpha Brain for mental dominance in your game and in your life. I'd like to remind you once again that with the new golf season upon us, there are golfers all over the world who are just discovering podcasts for the first time, and they would really appreciate reading your recommendation. Whether you listen online or on the go on your phone, please write an honest review about Golf Smarter wherever you subscribe. If you have any questions, comments, or suggestions for me, please click on the Hey Fred button at golfsmarter.com.
Smarterpodcasts.com. Delivering sound advice.